Cities can no longer prosecute people who sleep on the streets if they don't have anywhere else to go. A federal appeals court last week said it amounts to cruel and unusual punishment, which is unconstitutional. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with six homeless people from Boise who sued the city 8 years ago over a local ordinance that banned sleeping in public spaces. That case bounced back and forth in the courts for years. During that time, the city of Boise made changes to its rules, saying in 2014 that homeless people cannot be prosecuted for sleeping outside when shelters are full. This ruling will not only affect Boise, but cities all across the West Coast that have similar laws. This comes at a time when housing prices, as we all know, are rising across the West, and many of these cities are struggling to deal with an ever-expanding homeless population. In fact, when the Boise lawsuit was filed back in 2009, attorneys for the homeless people in that case said as many as 4,500 people did not have a place to sleep in Boise, and homeless shelters at that time only had about 700 available beds. Joining me live to talk more about this ruling and how the city of Boise moves forward are Howard Beladoff, an attorney and associate director of Idaho Legal Aid Services, Mike Journey, spokesperson for the city of Boise, Anna Maria Giles, the city of Boise's housing division manager, and joining us by phone is Eric Tarz, an attorney with the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, who has been working on this case for the last 5 years. Welcome to the program, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to start off, Howard, explain what the ruling will mean for homeless people who do not have an alternate place to sleep other than public spaces.
Well, it hopefully means that they no longer will be cited with a misdemeanor and having to face fines and jail time for sleeping when they have no alternative because either the shelters are full, they are not permitted to be in a shelter, or because of disabilities, they are unable to cope with the shelter environment. So hopefully, additionally, it will mean to solutions being brought forward by the city to address the complex issues surrounding homelessness and not just have people who can't otherwise stay in shelters be part of the criminal justice system, which is not a solution.
I'd like to bring the city into the conversation. And Mike, I think in fairness, in 2014, the city, as we noted, made changes.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the mayor and city council did decide that it was important for us to put our best foot forward. And we recognize the challenges that many of the people who are facing homelessness in our community have. And so as a result of that, they agreed that, yes, it makes sense for us, when the shelters are full, to not ticket people for camping. But at the same time, they also recognized the larger challenges of public safety, of the safety of those who are experiencing homelessness, and those challenges around that. I would like to kind of clarify something really quickly about the ruling. It's important to recognize that the ruling really wasn't about did not rule that the current ordinance is unconstitutional. It ruled that now a court will have to decide whether or not that ordinance is unconstitutional or not. They overturned a local judge's ruling that it was a constitutional law and therefore could, and so they overturned that. Now it's going to be able to come back and go to court.
And I want to be clear on something as well, because the appeals court said its decision is a narrow one, and they noted that in no way is it dictating to a city that it must provide sufficient shelter for homeless people, or that anyone may sit, lie, or sleep on streets at any time and at any place. And I'm quoting this from the opinion. So it's, quote, as long as there is no option of sleeping indoors, the government cannot criminalize indigent homeless people for sleeping outdoors or public property on the false premise they had a choice in the matter, unquote. So to Howard and Eric, when you said, you know, if they cannot, you know, be in a shelter for other reasons, how does that play into their opinion that if there is no other alternative?
Well, the city has adopted policies and they have the ordinance. Unfortunately, I have spoken to many, many homeless people within even the last week who have been continually cited when they've disabled. I have a client who's in hospice right now who was cited for camping because he can't stay in a shelter. So it's not being enforced in a way and in accordance with exactly how it's the ordinance reads. But we know that the number of homeless, unfortunately, in the city of Boise exceed the number of shelter beds. And it's the population is constantly in flux. We know, unfortunately, there is a complete lack of affordable housing in the city. There's a very low vacancy rates. Rents have skyrocketed, and we're seeing more and more people unsheltered. And a lot of these people are not the ones you see. There are hundreds of people living in cars in the city of Boise. I see it. I talk to them. I go to the shelters every week. I was there yesterday. Perhaps people from the city should go down there and really engage and talk to them.
So I want to bring, Eric, you into the conversation on the phone with us from D.C. because we have some listener comments about this ruling. One person, Kelly, she's from Boise. She says, you know, this is the thing that is unacceptable to me about allowing people to sleep in public. If it makes a place feel less safe or less sanitary, there needs to be an intervention. And she goes on to say Seattle, for example, seemed overrun with people living in less than sanitary conditions. And I worry about Boise heading in that direction. But I just don't know what that intervention is. I mean, Eric, how do you address that problem, that concern?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can all agree that no one wants to see our fellow citizens sleeping on the streets. That's not a win for the law center. That's not a win for the homeless people living there. And it's not a win for the businesses and residents of Boise. But up to this point, the problem has been that too many of our elected officials have tried to use quick fix criminalization laws to push those citizens out of public view using the criminal justice system rather than actually addressing the underlying causes of homelessness itself. And that just puts more fines and fees and arrest records in the way of people who are trying to get out of homelessness. And the courts are making clear that they can't do that, that cities need to find more constructive ways of addressing homelessness that don't infringe on people's rights. And luckily, there are a lot of examples and research that shows that providing housing and services actually costs less than a criminal justice approach. So to that listener, I would say, you know, absolutely nobody wants to see people living on the streets. It's not safe for those individuals, let alone the housed residents. The best thing to do is to focus on finding housing for those people and communities across the country that have developed what's called by name lists, where they outreach workers go, they make contact with those individuals, find out what the barriers are to them getting into housing, and then work to match them up with services that actually meet their needs, as opposed to just holding a stick over their head and saying, you go into that shelter or else, even when that shelter doesn't meet their needs. They're finding that when you actually do that, you get that person off the streets permanently. And again, that's a win for that individual. It's a win for the businesses because that person isn't on the streets. And it's a win for the entire community because you're actually using fewer resources to accomplish that goal.
Did you want to add
something,
Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say, we absolutely agree here at the City of Boise. We completely understand it. And that's why we are pursuing strategies through Housing First. We have just this next month, we're going to be opening a New Path Community Housing, which is going to provide about 40 beds for the chronically homeless in our community. It's very important. We recognize it's very important to get those folks into a stable housing situation and then work on the root of their community, of their homelessness. You know, again, we completely agree that the solution to homelessness is our homes. We completely understand that. We completely agree. And that's what we're working on. It's very challenging. It's very complex, especially in a state with federal funding continuing to drop off for these kinds of things, in a state that does not include funding for this on a significant level. You know, it takes, as our mayor says, it takes a village. And mm-hmm. So we've worked really hard to create coalitions around this issue that have allowed us to put this Housing First project going. We're working on something similar for veterans right now, too. And just one quick clarification. So far this year, about 22 people have been cited for camping in the city of Boise. So we're not talking about a significant, huge number of people who have been, and it's only done in the most significant of circumstances. So.
And Anna Maria, I wanted to bring you into the conversation because you are the housing division manager for the city of Boise. And for people who aren't aware of what Housing First is, can you tell people, you know, what that is? And we've had the folks on before talking about the veterans' home that's being built right now.
Sure. Thanks, Gemma. Housing First is a concept that addresses those that are most vulnerable in our community, specifically those who have experienced homelessness for a length of time, a duration of time, and usually accompanies one or two or more disabilities. The important point I want to make, following up on Mike's comment, is that, yes, New Path Community Housing, which is our first permanent supportive housing project within the state of Idaho, was developed in part by numerous partners that were brought together by Mayor Breeder, both public and private. This development is privately owned, but very much private and public funded. Accompanying the bricks and mortar is coordinated entry, which is a really important piece to making permanent supportive housing successful. And that's our way, a system-wide change of identifying those that are most vulnerable and picking them to be placed in that housing. So surrounding them with supportive services is the key to our success in permanent supportive housing as we go forward.
We are continuing our conversation about last week's ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that no longer allows for prosecution of people who are sleeping in a public space if there are no other options available. My panel today includes Howard Beladoff, an attorney and associate director of Idaho Legal Aid Services, Mike Journey, spokesperson for the City of Boise, Anna Maria Giles, the City of Boise's Housing Division Manager, and joining us by telephone is Eric Tarz, an attorney with the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, who has been working on this case along with Howard. Welcome back, everyone.
Thank you.
I want to talk, Mike, to you about the city of Boise and what you can do next, because I know with the Ninth Circuit, you can ask them to reconsider their ruling. Mm-hmm. You can also appeal all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Are those options you're looking into, or what are the next steps?
Absolutely, we are looking at that. You know, we're still taking a deeper look at this very complex ruling that came forward. Those two options are something that we're looking at. One of the things that became clear to us as we delved into it a little bit closer was the language in the ruling seemed to affirm kind of the path that you've already alluded to that we've taken on since 2014, that you can't ticket people when there are no shelter spaces available. And that's the path that we've been pursuing, and that's the path that we think we will continue to pursue depending on where we go from here. And I just like to put a really quick plug out. We have some really amazing partners in this community who help run these shelters that provide these services to those who are experiencing homelessness in our community. And so they are essential to this, and we really appreciate the things that they do to help us out with this.
And Howard and Eric, I would like to talk to you about what you believe that the city of Boise, but other Western cities who have had similar laws on the books, if they're doing enough, or what more can they do? And one of the things, Eric, that you alluded to was the criminal justice system and that not being the right place. But, you know, here in Ada County, there's a program called Monday Meetup, which is through Interfaith Sanctuary, which is one of the shelters here in the city of Boise. And they're working with our criminal justice department to get more people, you know, not just making sure that they're, you know, off the streets, but that they're helping them deal with any type of criminal, you know, misdemeanor cases, things like that they have, and then to help them walk through the process and to basically, you know, get them out of that cycle of homelessness. And they seem to be successful. I have numbers, and I mean that'll take all day to read them. But they're having success with this program, and there are, you know, as Anna Maria was talking about with the other programs. Is this enough, Howard? Is this enough, Eric?
I'll focus in on the more local aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I do attend Monday meetups on Monday, and I speak to people who get tickets. And one thing Mike may not be aware of, it's not just camping tickets. There may have been 22 camping tickets, but I have seen hundreds. And now the tactic is switched. They're citing people for being near the skate park and the underpasses, for being in a park after dark, even though that park is open 24/7, it's lighted, and there are a lot of skaters there. But only the homeless get cited for being in the park after dark. And that has always been a problem. So that it's a multifaceted approach. And yes, the sanctuary program is a step forward. But it's going to take a lot of people working together. And certainly the Housing First model, which has been around for years, very successful in places around the country, including Salt Lake, that's a first step. But over the years, the point in time count has found that there are 125 to 175 what they call chronically homeless individuals who've been homeless for rather long periods of time over a few-year period. There's a tremendous need, for example, for mental health services in this state. That's a large part of the
problem. But doesn't that go back to the legislature? I mean, and I say that because to place that on any city when our legislators...
I'm not placing it on the legislatures, on the city, but actually the voters will have a chance to vote on that in November because the availability of Medicaid will address that. But yes, but so no, that proves my point. No one person, not me, not anybody with the city, not anybody at the shelter can solve this problems. It has to be everybody from the courts to the hospitals to the housing authority to the state. And you can just go as near as Utah and see what the state of Utah has done. And I think Eric can speak to those sorts of things better than I.
Yeah, and Eric, if you could give us an example of maybe what some other Western cities have done, because when we look at even like the city of Eugene and the city of Springfield, the city of Eugene does not prosecute. And over the years, they have seen a rise in their in safety issues, frankly, in that city, in their downtown core. But they're basically twin cities. Springfield, right next door, has had similar rules on the books that Boise has had, and they do not have as much of a safety issue. So how do we? Because I could go through. I have about four or five listener questions asking about how do we retain the safety of our city. That is a concern. So how do we do that? Have other cities been able to do that?
Yeah, they have. I think, again, the question is safety for who? Is it safety just for the housed residents? But what about the safety of those who are unhoused as well? It's not a secure environment. People are vulnerable not only to crime, but to the elements. So the real public safety solution is one that works for all members of the community, not just the housed members of the communities. And they are developing those solutions all across the country. We've seen safe parking lots where people who are living in their cars can sleep. They get an element of security at night. They can get bathrooms so that they don't have to, you know, pee into a bottle or anything like that and then pee it on the streets, causing public health issues. They have legalized encampments. You know, we aren't huge fans of people needing to continue to live outside, but if you have people living outside in an organized fashion as opposed to a disorganized fashion, you can address some of those safety concerns. You can address the public health concerns. And we did see that immediately after the ruling that several of their cities, Portland immediately put a moratorium on the enforcement of their anti-sleeping laws. We saw Beaverton, Oregon, start looking into creating a safe lot program. Olympia, Washington had a scheduled eviction of some some encampments, and instead they put a stop to that and are looking for legalized options for where those people can go.
So, Eric, can I interrupt really quick and just ask you, when you said, you know, about safe encampments and if they're managed correctly, so there are cities that have been able to do that, question one, and also then how do you do that? Because I asked that because we had a huge issue with what was known as Cooper Court here in Boise, where this was outside of Interfaith Sanctuary. And in 2016, the city came in and they took Cooper Court down. And there were numerous safety issues, and not safety issues just as, you're totally correct, not just for the housed people of Boise, but for so many of the residents of Cooper Court. And their safety was at risk. So are there truly ways to do this where it is a safe environment for those who are living in the encampment, not just for the people, you know, who are the housed residents?
Absolutely. We did a survey in 2017 and put it into a report called Tent City USA, where we found best practices that are being put into place in different cities of all different sizes, large and small, across the city or across the country. We looked at Las Cruces, New Mexico, which has a legalized encampment there that's co-located with a bunch of the service providers and is very self-governing, runs itself. And the mayor and the city council there are kind of celebrating it as a great partnership. It's been a great tool for them. Helping to people to get off the streets and, again, in a disorganized fashion, get to a place where they have a little bit more safety, a little bit more security, a little bit more shelter, access to storage, access to sanitation, those sorts of things that helps those individuals as well as the entire community. So I think that, the idea is that we want to, nobody wants to see people living on the streets. Nobody wants anybody in unsafe situations. But, I don't see how enforcing a law that says people can't sleep when they don't, when the city knows already that it does not have enough shelter capacity to accommodate the full need of all of Boise's unsheltered homeless people. That doesn't help anybody. It costs the city money to just move people around. It destabilizes their lives, destabilizes their relationships that they might have with service providers and prevents them from getting out of housing. And again, it gives them fines and fees that they can't possibly pay because they're homeless already. And it gives them an arrest record. And all those things are going to be a barrier to those people getting out of homelessness. So in Los Angeles, for example, we saw that the city was spending about $100 million a year on homelessness. $87 million of that was law enforcement, jail costs, the cost of police time, the court's time, et cetera, and only $13 million was on services. If you flip that, then you're going to be able to make a real dent in homelessness for everybody, and it's going to end up the more you spend on the services side, the less you're going to have to spend on the law enforcement side. And as Howie was saying, we've seen in places like Utah where they've recorded that it costs 2 to 3 times less to provide those housing and services than it does to deal with it through the criminal justice.
And Eric, we're running out of time, and I appreciate your perspective, but I do want to bring Mike and Anna Maria back into the conversation very quickly as we wrap up, that the city of Boise, this isn't just an overnight fix, though. And there are things with Housing First, with the Monday meetup, that there are things happening. But even Howard, as you said, this isn't just one entity that can fix this issue.
And that's exactly right. That's how we've approached going forward with Housing First. That's how we're going to continue. We think it's a great model. And we think between this and the Valor Point project, which we're looking at for veterans, we can take a large chunk out of that 125 to 175 number that Howard mentioned, and perhaps a proof of concept for the community that this is something that we can do. Those are numbers that LA and Seattle and those, they have huge numbers. These are numbers that we believe at the city of Boise that we can really have an impact on. But again, it's not easy, it's expensive, and it's a big undertaking. So,
and Anna Maria.
Gemma, real quick, Boise is unique because we have a lot of opportunity to grow our housing. We want to and we can develop housing. We're not like other cities that have fallen victim to housing shortages. We have a lot of land, vacant land, that can be developed into housing units. So we've developed a strategy called Grow Our Housing, and there's three principles I want to go over real quick. balanced, meaning we want to serve all incomes, including permanent supportive housing. Compact, we want to embrace and encourage density. And above all possible, we're not going to work on a strategy that's not achievable. We're going to invest in something that can really happen soon.
And Howard, to have you wrap up, as you said, this isn't just one entity. We have to have buy-in from everyone. And we've talked about government, you know, from legislature to the city of Boise. But what about buy-in just from the community? Because there are people on both sides of this issue that would agree that housing and safety are not just for the already housed. There are other people who live in this city who would say, don't make my city unsafe. I mean, that's why we live here. That's why we moved here. How do we get that buy-in from everyone?
Well, let me clarify a few things, because I think we're getting off a little on this whole idea that the homeless people are criminals. No. They used to live among us. They're not criminals. There are...
Well, that was never my intent to put that out there.
Let me just address, first, sleeping is not a crime. And that's what those ordinances did. They made it into a crime. That's not the solution. There's nothing in this ruling that says if somebody does anything that's criminal, any kind of criminal conduct, whether putting a tent in a sidewalk or interfering with traffic, you can cite them for that if it's a crime. So let's put that aside. There's no question that it doesn't matter if you live near sanctuary or in sanctuary, or you live on the bench, or you live in the North End or around Boise State, there's criminal activities. And so I understand people's fears, but in the city of Boise, and I agree with Mike here, that we have a manageable problem. We can bring resources to that problem. We can build more housing, and we need to build more housing. But I think there are models out there that Eric has mentioned around the country, both to deal with this homelessness situation and the housing situation, that we need to follow and we need to open up.
Well, I really appreciate all of you for coming in today. I think we could continue this conversation through the hour. I think we will be coming back to this in the future. I want to thank my guest today, Howard Baladoff, an attorney and associate director of Idaho Legal Aid Services, who did work on this case, Mike Journey, spokesperson for the city of Boise, Anna Maria Giles, the city of Boise's housing division manager, and by telephone today, Eric Tarz, an attorney with the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. Thank you all for coming in today, for talking about this. It is not an issue that is easy to solve. I hope that we've at least started a conversation in our community and in other communities. So thank you all for coming in today.